And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs. I almost forgot our own email address there. Say it again, www.nagb.org.bs. Very unfortunate moniker for our country, but anyhow, if you go there, you will get to the National Art Gallery webpage, and if on that webpage, we now actually have the show. So if you miss the show, if you're in the car and you're like, oh, I missed the first part, darn, you can go there tomorrow and you can go to the education section on our website and then scroll down to Blank Canvas and you can click on the link and you can listen to the show to your heart's content. So we are going to turn to the other two artists we have in the studio this evening, Alicia Wallace and Natalie Willis. Hello. Welcome, both of you. Now, ooh. Natalie, you're a professional artist.
Oh, God.
I would say, or you're a practicing artist. You also work at the National Art Gallery as an assistant curator, so I'll just have to put that out there. But Alicia, you're not a practicing artist. So how did you get involved in the NE8?
Well, I was doing some work with Dell Foxton mm-hmm. on her website and writing copy. And she told me that she was putting together this multidisciplinary group of artists to submit to NE8. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Let me know if you need some help with writing up anything. And mm-hmm. she said, actually, yes. Sign up right now.
Okay. That sounds like Dell. Yeah. So yeah. Dell's an artist. She lives in Freeport, Grand Bahama, just outside of Freeport. Yeah, Natalie's also from Freeport, so it's Freeport in the house. Yeah. And Dell is, in fact, a paper maker. And
yes,
an amazing mm-hmm. one. And she does installations based on these kind of homemade papers. And she goes out into the bush and actually gets fibers and things from her surroundings and makes paper. Yeah, makes paper out of all kinds of organic matter that she finds around her home. Because, of course, paper is actually made out of trees. So were you involved? Did you get to make any paper?
I didn't. Aww. But she surprised me by sending me quite a stack of paper mm-hmm. and told me to get involved and make a quilt, which I was not prepared for at all.
Okay.
I thought I was just going to create a zine or something like that from interviews with the other participating artists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, no, I know you've told me that you're not an artist, but I think you are, so get with it and make a quilt.
Well, good for her. Well, I think that's really interesting because quite often on the show we talk about kind of creativity and what that means. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are scared by the idea of creativity because they think the only outlet for that is to be an artist. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's so many other outlets for being a creative individual, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously you're more of a writer, and being a writer is absolutely a creative job. But so I think it's interesting that Dell recognized that and tried to kind of reel you in.
She really did, and we argued about it a lot.
Oh, really?
I'm a writer. And she's like, yep, writers are artists. And I was like, no.
But you
work
are.
With words. And she's like, no. And she really forced me to step out of my comfort zone, which is mm-hmm. something that I'm constantly forcing myself to do. Mm-hmm. But this really wasn't something that I was prepared for. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm a little bit obsessed with perfection. Mm-hmm. And I have a hard time doing anything that I don't think I am an expert in mm-hmm. or adept in. I'm used to being the expert in the room in a lot of mm-hmm. the work that I mm-hmm. do. So it was a little bit terrifying.
So how did you approach that then? How did you deal with that? So you were sitting with this big stack of paper.
I went immediately to what I know, which is mm-hmm. words. Mm-hmm. So I started mm-hmm. thinking about how I could use words to create something. And Dell actually asked me for a sketch of what I was going to do. And I said, I told you I'm not an artist. How will I sketch this? So I kind of created a really weird map-looking thing with a legend. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, all the hash marks mean this. She said it was fine. And I actually changed my mind, because at first I was going to create kind of a Scrabble board mm-hmm. and do a sort of crossword puzzle, I guess, on identity. Because mm-hmm. right now I'm very interested in identity, the way I mm-hmm. see myself, the way other people perceive me, mm-hmm. and the way I fit into different communities, mm-hmm. but the way I fit into the country, into the world.
But it's actually quite interesting though, because your piece is about labels, right?
Yes.
And in fact, you, I mean, this fact that she wanted to identify you as something that you didn't identify yourself
yes.
at is quite interesting, right?
It is.
But that she kind of teased it out of you. So maybe she saw something in you, but you weren't comfortable with that label.
No, it took me a long time to come around to it. I just sat mm-hmm. there with the paper and I was just thinking, this paper is just so beautiful. I don't want to waste it. I don't want to do anything ridiculous with it. I just don't know what to do. And I have a lot of friends who are artists, which is interesting. So I would talk to them kind of on WhatsApp and message them and say, I have no idea what I'm doing with this paper. And everyone just said, just go with it.
Just play.
Just stop thinking so hard about it and just do it. And that's the kind of advice that I give other people. But it was really hard to accept it myself.
Did you find it, in the end, a good exercise for your own practice to allow yourself that freedom and that sense of play with something that you'd been hitherto, like, uncomfortable with?
I did. It was something that pushed me, like I said, outside of my box and also kind of gave me a different kind of comfort where I was able to sort of set aside this expectation of constant perfection or of only being uncomfortable in spaces that I create for myself and pushing boundaries that I decide I want to push. So it was really interesting to see myself as someone else did and be able to free myself of any expectations that even I had. And that's what led to me kind of getting rid of that idea for the Scrabble board and doing something completely different.
So why don't you tell the audience then what you did?
I created sort of a mandala, I guess. One of my friends is really into them, and we were talking, and I told her that I love them, and I use them in my meditation. And she said, well, you said that you wanted your central focus to be womanhood, focusing on the word woman, so you could kind of play with the letters. And we played together, and we came up with a way that I could spell woman with within that mandala. And once I did that, and I pasted it, I was like, well, this is kind of small, and the paper that I put it on is really big. What else am I going to do? And I started thinking about what stems from my own womanhood and what are the labels that people put on me, because they see me as a woman and they see me as all these other things at the same time. So it had me thinking about my blackness. It had me thinking about queerness. It had me thinking about age, where I'm from, and the questions that people ask me to try to fit me into boxes. So there's a section of the work that just focuses on those questions, the kind of, where are you from? The Bahamas. No, where are you from? Like, Africa? I'm not sure what part.
Yeah, well, we all get those. I think as women in general, I mean, I suppose men do as well. And I try to think about how men are also defined by labels. You know, normally it's their job, right? And their level of success and their title and things like that, which I think are constrictive in their own way. But I think women particularly, you know, you're someone's daughter, you're someone's wife, you're someone's sister, and those are very strong labels. I'm currently Daisy's mother, having been having been Richard's daughter for a long time, and then several people's wives. I'm now Emily and Daisy's mother. So I'm like, hello, Daisy's mummy, and I'm like, yep, that's me. So I think it's very interesting because we have to kind of go through our lives adapting to that. And actually, something else you said, age, very interesting, like how things change for you as you age as a woman.
And now I'm at this weird spot where, can I still be a young person? It's like once you hit 30, you know, everything's
kind of
under
30. Oh, honey, wait till you hit 50.
Oh,
I got to scroll down when I'm booking an airline ticket, and it's like, keep scrolling, 1970, 1960. I'm like, oh, there I am. Yeah, or if you're like if you're filling out like the age bracket, you know, it's like sort of 12 to 18, you know, 19 to 25, and I'm like right at the end. I mean, the next one is like, in the grave.
Start getting lumped in with the to 60.
Exactly. Soon. Yeah, 60 and above. So really interesting. So and then when you saw the work, because your work is just one piece. So basically, it's a large piece of paper. I'd say like sort of 2 feet by a feet. I mean, it's quite quite big, more or less. And but it's then alongside, I think it's 7 other pieces, right?
Yes.
There's 8 pieces in total. And did you just all show up and just? How was the collaborative part of putting that final piece together?
Well, everyone else is in Grand Bahama, so they all sent their work. And it was actually me and Natalie.
Yep.
Laid them out, and I learned how to hang art.
Yes. Okay.
It was a learning day.
Oh, that's really interesting. How did you decide which one would go where?
Well, I asked Del. Well, we both tried to get in touch with Del to like see what she wanted, and she wanted it really as simple as alphabetical order.
Okay.
Because she didn't want a hierarchy with it, right? Which was lovely. But then we had to kind of change the orientation, so me and Holly ended up laying it out and then putting it back up again. So basically, this thing got put up twice, because that's what happens when you curate, right? Is like, you know, you kind of have to work with the space, and it all changes, and so typical curator day.
Yeah. So, Alicia, do you feel like now you're a proper artist, now that your work is there in a show with other artists, or do you still
60%.
Feel like an interloper?
Maybe about 60% there.
Mm-hmm. So, Natalie, you also have work in the show. So you have a video, which is there also in Hillside, which is called Rivet, and you're playing a character in that. And I'm not sure it's a character that everyone in the Bahamas would know. So why did you pick that character? Because you're playing a character, Rosie the Riveter, who's a very who was a female, a symbol of female empowerment during the Second World War.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about why you picked that character and what it is you're doing in that video.
So basically the whole sort of exercise of making this video for me was kind of a way to think through the fact that I'm kind of at the intersection of a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Bahamian and I'm not. I'm, you know, maybe...
Just to clarify, she's got parents of two different nationalities.
Well, four.
Four. Okay, well, you only got two parents, but yes.
Two parents, but yeah.
Four nationalities mixed in there. Yeah.
So like both my parents are like half and half, and then I'm half and half racially because of my parents. So basically last year, because I'm Bahamian and because I'm English, I had to deal with what I would call two failed referendums, right? That basically, you know, if you let it, it made you feel like you weren't welcome in the world as a woman, as a person of color, as a queer person. You know, it was a lot of stuff going on. And I guess what a lot of people do if they're trying to think through something, they try to mediate it,
right? And Britain very much, it seemed to be about xenophobia as well.
Oh, yeah. All of it was in its own way, right? So I basically decided to... I need to stop saying basically. I decided... it's my pet peeve for myself. Anyway, I decided that I would kind of... try to think through my situation through a made-up character, and she's basically this imagined daughter of Rosie the Riveter, like, living now and in my situation. And I mean, Rosie was like this sort of symbol of, like, you know, feminism and strong women, but also she's a symbol of white feminism, and it's kind of hard to think through that if you're kind of, you know, a bit of both. You want your feminism to be intersectional, you want it to count for the fact that you know, people, you know, get excluded for a lot of different reasons other than being women all at the same time, right?
And she was a British symbol during the war, American, British, no?
Or was I thought she was British.
I think she is British. Yeah, so she was a quite a famous kind of, I mean, I don't want to say a cartoon character, but she was an image, a graphic designed image of a woman with her hair tied up and a kerchief, and she was always wearing overalls, and she actually, like, big old biceps, right? She was really strong, because a lot of the women in the 40s in the States and in the UK, of course, all went to work to build to the munitions factories and such, and it was the first time that women in a large scale were really encouraged to go to work and found a place in the workforce and found a place of self-worth in the workforce, and that's really sort of where the kind of women's movement really came out of that period.
Because the thing that also makes Rosie quite problematic is, like, she is this woman who's being, like, celebrated for all these things, and then throughout history, black women have always been women of work.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's a really hard and really weird thing to try and balance in your head, like, how all of that kind of, like, power structure and plays kind of work. So, yeah, the whole video is me kind of talking through this imagined character, and it's actually, the voice is my voice, but it's talking about these encounters with this woman, and they're all the language kind of focuses on this idea of being in between and not having place.
And you're kind of wandering around. You're sort of wandering through the landscape of New Providence, you know, in quite identifiable places too, like the Queen's Staircase, sort of in search of something.
And the funny thing was, like, most of the footage got filmed actually the day of the referendum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was walking around in this, like, Rosie the Riveter gear, which is actually, like, my dad's, like, coveralls, right? And I actually had people, like, driving past, like, these dudes in a truck who literally, like, they don't care what they're doing, but they, like, drove past and they're like, no, 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 because they're like, vote no.
Yeah.
And it's just like, holy crap, like, I'm having to deal with all this as I'm trying to think through this myself. And it's like, they're saying this without thinking anything of it, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And it's just like, you have no idea what that means.
It's quite interesting that they just shouted no at you just because you were also, like, that they identified you as somebody who would be a yes voter. Because I think that's what's interesting about the referendum is that clearly a lot of women were not yes voters. Otherwise.
And Grand Bahama, like, I'm sorry, like, East Grand Bahama let me down bad.
Yeah.
Like, real bad.
Yeah.
Them numbers, they did something. I cried so much that day, but so did a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true. I think we all did. So we're just going to quickly go down the short break, and we come back. I just like to us to talk in general about, you know, how we can process some of these things through our work. I mean, through my own work that I do at the National Art Gallery. I'm not an artist, but obviously, you know, raising these questions and trying to deal with these issues is a way of kind of coping, a coping mechanism somehow. And I would imagine that for all three of you, doing the work was also somehow a way to work through a lot of these issues. I'd like to talk a bit more about that after the break. So I'm in the studio with Natalie Willis, Alicia Wallace, and Cynthia Raming, the three artists who are with me tonight and whose work is all actually at Hillside House on Cumberland Street, which is the second location of the National Exhibition this year. And that, in fact, closes on Sunday. So I really encourage everybody to go out in the next couple of days and catch those works now. The rest of the NE stays on in the National Art Gallery until the middle of April, but this particular part of the show comes down. So please go out and see that and engage with the work by these amazing Bahamian artists. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.